Deborah, with her 30 years of being an entrepreneur and creating over 7 companies, knows exactly what it means to accept the mission. When you make that decision, when you accept the mission to become a solopreneur, to take yourself and your talents to market, then you embrace a life of not only unlimited possibilities, but also the unknown. It's an elixir of fear and bravery that only someone who's taken the leap really understands. On our show, Deb digs deep with her guests to highlight what you, the listener, wants to know. The stories, the whys, and the hows to navigate the journey to success. Get ready to hear from some of the most incredible mission takers from Generation Z to Boomers. So sit up, perk up, and get ready to be blown away. Now here is your host, Deborah Drummond.
All right, you guys. You know, I know you've come back. I know why you've come back. You've come back to hear the new word. You've come back. You know that I'm on this rhythm. Do you know how difficult it is to find the most incredible word for the best podcast guests and podcast audience ever? You guys rock. You know you rock. I know you rock. And so what am I going to call you today? Well, why don't I just say that you're incredible rock stars? I'm going to put those two together. You guys are rocking it. Thank you so much. You know, this is a platform for entrepreneurs and innovators and creatives and media to get out a very cool message, really honestly, about gumption, about taking on the mission, what it takes, why they took it, why they keep taking it. And it's inspiring. At the very least, it's hilarious. And it allows people to go and be crazy in their own world, whatever it means. Like whatever mission that you're, you know, wavering on, or you're going to take in 5 years that you don't even know that's coming. Like you're just pipelining bravery at this point, right? Whatever your story is, we so thank you for sharing the word, because that's what it takes, right? It takes a little bit of gumption, takes a little bit of hell yeah, when you don't know that hell yeah is going to be the way to go. So I'm, as always, impressed and enthusiastic about today's show. We have someone on that we have not had on before, and that's pretty cool and funky. So we have a guest who gets asked the same questions over and over again, because you probably haven't heard of what she does either. So I would like to introduce you to my personal first time meeting a female stunt coordinator. Maya, please welcome to the show.
Hi.
Hi.
Happy to be here.
I know. So look, when we talk about mission, when we talk about saying yes, when we talk about making decisions, really, what was it that was appealing about this type of work? Or did it fall in your lap? Or is it something that you always wanted to do since you watched Wonder Woman when you were a child? Like, tell us, what preceded this great career of yours?
Well, I was a professional athlete for a while. As a teenager, I competed in a lot of sports. I downhill ski race, I downhill mountain bike race, I showed horses. So I was always very physical, but I did not know that being a stunt performer and then transitioning into being a stunt coordinator was even a job until I was probably like 18. But then I...
No, I was going to say that's, I mean, and you're not 19. So interesting, because people, even though people would imagine that those jobs are available, it's those really interesting jobs that we hear about that people do that we don't necessarily put together. Like if someone's looking to go into, well, even the film industry or whatever, it's probably not the first three things that pops into people's mind. They're like, well, of course there would have to be, you know, people that do stunts. Of course there, and we know that, but I don't think it comes to top of mind. So at 18, it's pretty young.
It's definitely on the top banner at job fairs. No, and I think maybe I was 18, 19. And I just sort of, I started doing some background and looking at film stuff and just was experimenting with what I wanted to do. I went to school for fashion design, which is completely on the other side of the world. And then I sort of just started getting teased at this world. And I was like, you know what? I think I really enjoy this. And I think I want to jump into this path instead of this path. And that's how I got my start. And from there, I've just snowballed in all the learning, and I threw myself into training and learning, getting as many courses and things that were applicable to my job that I could possibly get.
So is there a school, or does someone take you under their wing? Are you apprenticed? Like, how does that work?
There are some stunt schools, but they're not really, most of them aren't really fully respected in the industry. So I wouldn't recommend that as an avenue to go, but there are specialty courses. Like there's some driving schools, There's a really great one in LA, Rick Siemens, that pretty much everybody has gone to at some point. You know, there's, you know, getting new licenses, like your motorcycle license, you know, making sure you can drive a variety of vehicles, going to fight classes, fight choreography, different martial arts. So a lot of it's just broad, yeah, as many things as you can learn how to do and have a high level of skill in, the better. But nothing specific, no.
Yeah, no, that's really interesting. And, you know, it's interesting even when, like, when you're talking about fashion, because my son went that kind of opposite as well. We just had, you know, he wants to go into fashion. Well, he's in fashion and learning fashion, and people like, oh, is he in school? Is he in this? And he is not. And ironically, he was too young to be accepted into the classes. And so we did what you did and put him with he's understudied, you know, he's worked with this designer and hopefully he'll work with another designer. And we just had a call from the school again saying we can take him. And I'm like, I'm not sure we need you. I'm really not sure we need you.
Getting a better education where he is.
Yeah, a little bit like that. So that's interesting that you kind of put it together. So when you made the announcement to your family, to your friends, to your man, to your woman, to your girlfriends, to you, like, what were people saying? You're like, I think I'm going to go, you know, I was going to be a fashion person. I was going to make some cool, funky stuff for people to wear. Now I'm going to go, you know, play, you know, Smash Up Derby. Like what was the responses that people gave?
Well, my parents, they were like, okay, well, that's an interesting phase. You know, you'll grow up and you'll get a real job. Cause still a lot of people really don't think a lot of film industry jobs are real jobs, but they are, mm-hmm. they have a full career. Yeah, I have been doing this for almost 20 years now, and it's a career.
Yeah.
But yeah, my friends, I think a lot of my friends were like, okay, that's cool. But like, are you sure you want to do that? Because I think, you know, it's really dangerous, isn't it? Or, you know, a lot of people have the misconception that you have to be this crazy adrenaline junkie. You know, you definitely have to be a certain type of person to do stunts, because you have to understand that you're doing very physical things, but it's a very big mental game as well. And you also have to keep yourself safe. You're not just being this crazy adrenaline junkie, hucking yourself off things, because you have to do it precisely. You often have to do it repeatedly, and you don't want to get hurt, because then you can't work for a while.
Right.
It is a calculated game of extreme sports and extreme athleticism, but it's a bit of a safe box.
Safe box. So, I mean, I'm sure you've been asked this question, but, you know, have you been injured? And is it one of those areas of careers that if you get injured, you're you can't work till you're back? But what is that like to be able to, you know, if you have a career, it'd be like, if someone said, you know, I mean, I don't know if, you know, if most entrepreneurs get hurt or that kind of thing, if you get hurt, then it's like, oh, wow, that's a different experience financially and otherwise. So what's it like in your sector for you on that?
It is. And I mean, I have been injured before. I've also had some that people would consider them to be really bad, but they're not actually, like, I've cut myself a lot. I actually had one stunt where I cut basically the whole side of my face, and I just had cuts everywhere. So it looked really bad, but it wasn't actually, like, I was back to work in 5 days. It wasn't actually debilitating. I went to work the next week with stitches in my face. Like, you can still work through a lot of it. But I've had a few that have slowed me up for a little while.
Yeah.
Those ones are a little more challenging, I guess, because you're trying to get back to work, but you also want to let it heal properly so you don't set yourself up for long-term, you know, crippled, you know, being that person that's like walking around like they're 60 when they're 40.
You know,
when I was in my 20s, you do sort of think of that a little bit, but at the same time, you're also like, I just want to get back to work. So yeah, like, I might've torn something, but I'm fine.
Yeah.
There's a little bit of a, like, you know, when I was younger, I definitely wasn't quite as smart with injuries.
Mm-hmm.
Now where I'm like, okay, no, I'm going to let it heal and I'll recover and get strong again. And then do stuff. Whereas when I was younger, I would be like, I'm just going to go back to work. I tore something in my knee, but I'll just tape it up.
Well, I think that's a very,
I do not recommend that. So everyone listening, let your body heal. That's better for the future.
I think that's a very entrepreneurial way of thinking. I remember there was a gentleman And he was a smart guy. So when I used to have a private health clinic, and when I first started my business, it was, you know, massage, whatever. And I literally started massaging from home until it went to a clinic, until it went, you know, as it grew. But he went through a magazine that I was advertising in. It was called Common Ground. You might remember it, in Vancouver.
And all the health store places.
Yeah. All the health four-star places and all of us holistic practitioners that he knew wouldn't have insurance, right? He knew we probably wouldn't have health insurance. Everyone's just kind of starting and budding. And gosh knows how long that was, like 20 years ago, something, 25 years ago. And he contacted me and he's like, you know, if you got injured, what would you do? And I'm like, no idea. Probably keep working. Isn't that what we all do? Because you're entrepreneurial and you got food and kids and, you know, all those kind of things that need you. And so he was really smart. He built his whole client base with entrepreneurs, knowing predominantly we needed something, but also knowing that we probably wouldn't, you know, tap into it because you'd need to work. So anyways, I remember I had this, and we talk every year, how's it going, blah, blah, blah. And it was a disability deal, and you cash out in 20 years, right? And not too many years ago, 5 years, whatever it was, I was like, oh, okay, I'm cashing that out. That was really cool. I never touched that money. And then I thought about it. I'm like, that's kind of strange. In 20 years, I never touched that money. Now here's the interesting thing. We were talking, and he's like, it was really interesting that you would never cash it out when you had, you know, your daughter. You never cashed it out when you had your son. You never cashed it out. Well, obviously then it was older than 20 years because my daughter's 29. You just never cashed it out. Like, and I'm like, well, first of all, I'm really healthy, but I'm like, I didn't know I could.
Yeah.
I didn't know that I could. Because that's how we think. We just drive down. He goes, yeah, you've never. And I go, I bet you, if you actually go back, he goes, I know what you're going to say. If you go back and look at the entrepreneurs that he had insurance, he goes, it just didn't cross their mind, which was great because I got more money at the end. But there was times where I could have really needed it.
Right. And you probably should have taken that little like self-imposed maternity leave and pay yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. Things that we think about.
The things we learn.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So look, you have more in your life than just your work. You are balancing life, family, career. And most people, when you hear film industry, you're like, there is no balance. It's long hours. It's long game. You know, what's that like for you? How do you balance this whole party?
It's definitely a juggle. I'm very fortunate that my husband is a great partner. We work together a lot, which is fantastic. He's a stuntman as well. So we do try to have that balance where we try to both not be working or insane or running something at the same time. We've done it a little bit and we're like, okay, we can't do that anymore. We started a family a few years ago.
Yeah.
We have two young boys, so that now we definitely don't take on a big project at the same time.
Ever. Right.
That's our new rule, so that we have that family balance, and that so the boys always have one of us here.
Right. Right. Yeah. It's tough, right? And you know, it's interesting. So you're both in the industry, which I think helps, doesn't it? I mean, there's a level of understanding that comes with that, level of compassion.
There is. There's that knowing that I don't know what time I'm going to be done work. You can, you know, depending on the show and depending on how the day is set up, you can kind of guess, but you know, you get thrown curveballs all the time and you just never know when you're going to be done.
Yeah.
And for us, it's nice. We do enjoy working together as well, because we, you know, we bounce ideas off each other and we're like, okay, I was thinking this for this, and this is how I'm going to plan this. Like, what do you think? And we, you know, we balance ideas off each other, which is really fun. And then we also train as well together. We built a gym in our living room. So we have a big setup to test wires, and we have a trampoline in our living room, which our kids love too.
Yes.
We can do a lot of our training and setting stuff up at home. So that was another balance for us. Instead of driving to somewhere to train, we can save that time, and all that time that we would spend commuting, we can actually just spend as a family or as a couple.
Yeah. And
get some of that quality time back. So that was our other balance and time saver.
Well, I think those are great, you know, for anyone out there that's looking to balance in any way. Like, even if, I mean, people talked about that with just, you know, this whole idea of working from home, how much time that they save. And some people really have embraced that and wanted to stay with that. And then other people not, right? They're like, ah, get me out. But that just all those time saving layering, those layering techniques that we have to use as people that have full lives. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Keep it up. So I'm in the book business, as we know. I love collaborations. I love books. I just was so graced to do a foreword of a very cool woman's book on leadership, and it just arrived in the mail. Yay. I think that's really the only thing I get on Amazon is I support people's books. But so authorship is such an interesting experience. I just came from a 3-day workshop with Cheryl Strayed, who of course did the movie Wild, or she wrote the script for Wild, or it was her book. And then Reese picked it up and did it. And there was, I thought I was walking into a crowd of 35 people. There was actually 400 and 700 on Zoom. And it was so interesting to meet all sorts of people that are into authorship. Some people writing journals, some people actually, the woman who is the writer for Family Guy. We did some, you know, you have to work with a partner. You have to find a partner and spill your guts, you know, those kind of workshops. That's what it was. So excited for that part. But there was all these different types of authors and poets and journalists and people that want to be. So I hear that you have stepped in to the world of authorship. Share. You got a novel coming up or going on?
I write scripts quite a bit. I've written a few short films that I have directed and produced as well. But I also have a graphic novel that I'm working on that is probably my biggest, aside from my children, life passion project. I've been sort of dabbling in and out of research on it for about 10 years, but I'm really focusing on trying to get it done right now. I'm working with an amazing artist, Lonnie Imrie. She's illustrating it because I am horrible at drawing. I draw a little, like, I draw my little storyboards. And I'm like, can you make it look better? And they write out the book. So we've been collaborating together. So that's my book that is in the works that I'm very, very excited about. It's a story following the Amazons in ancient Greece, but sort of from their perspective, because they're dabbled on in history, but nobody really wrote that much about them because it was a bunch of women because they didn't write the history books. So I'm kind of taking the little tidbits that I can find in history, and they've uncovered more of their burial sites and things like that. So they've learned a little more about them in the last 10 years. So as that information is coming out, I've been layering that into the story, trying to have a bit of fact and then, you know, my own fictional version of it as well.
Wow. I mean, that's not that, again, I mean, you're such a creative woman, my dear. And you're, I mean, that's a very interesting book as well. Like, so you have this interesting career. You have a little bit, so this is not a book that you're going to be in competition with, you know, 500. It's not going to be a sector for that. It's not like you're going into self-help or leadership or cooking or, you know, how to balance, you know, careerhood and motherhood. No. What made you decide to pick that? Like, where did that come from?
I think the story, once I sort of like just dabbled into some of the characters, and then I was like, oh, and the more I started to research, I was like, nobody's told this story. And it just, I don't know, for whatever reason, it just grabbed my heart and soul. And I was like, I just need to tell this story. And I want to do it as a film someday. So that was the eventual goal, is the graphic novel is the vessel to make a film. As I think it's just an interesting story from an interesting perspective that no one's seen that part. And I love historical pieces. I love researching historical things. And so I think that just pulled me in, and I was like, I want to unleash this story on the world. I think people need to see this perspective from that time period, because that, you know.
Oh, I'm looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to that. So do you have a title that you want to share, or do you want to drip on us and make us excited? Like, what's your, you know, what you have to do a launch. We're going to have to announce when the launch is. Yes. Bring you back on, and we're going to have a launch. But I'm all about the party. I'm all about the party. You know that, right? I'm all about the party. So do tell if you can anything more.
It's called Amazon. So it's like Amazon, but with an E on the end, because that is traditionally how they actually spelled or wrote about themselves, the Amazons. Yes. So that is the title. And there is an Instagram page for it that we haven't put too much out yet, because we're still working on a lot of the art and getting the pieces together. But we have it's Amazon, the graphic novel, on Instagram. I've tagged it on my own personal page. So if you follow my personal page, you can link in through there.
Wow, absolutely. So you guys need to do that so that you can watch the progression. I love that, right? I love that. The when you're watching the procession really of an organic creative growth project. Like, I love it because it does turn and twist. I mean, I just shared with you earlier how we just made a big twist on a project that we're doing. And, you know, you're like, oh my gosh, we got to make a twist. And then you're like, oh my God, look at the opportunity. And then at a certain point, you're like, okay, we've twisted and created enough. And then the project starts and then it gets interesting. It gets interesting. And following people through that journey is so incredible. I think it builds a relationship. It builds a relationship to the project.
Yeah. And I think it'll hopefully with our sort of plan, as we start releasing a little bit more on social media, it'll get you to know the characters a little bit before. Mm-hmm. They've been so true to me for so long. And even seeing them drawn for the first time, like I had a vision of them in my head. And as soon as Lonnie drew them, they were exactly what I had imagined, which was weird that her and I were such, like, that's why our such a good partnership. She really understood my vision so clearly. And just my descriptions of the characters, she brought them to life and they look exactly like I imagined them.
Wow. Wow. I'm getting a flashback of grade 10 art class when we were told that we had to draw. So I love to draw. And we had to draw like a cave or some kind of stable platform where there was beings, didn't have to necessarily be human beings, but they had to have the elements of a human being. They had to have the ability to see, to hear, to move, to speak. And oh my gosh, it was weird in school. I mean, it's not weird that I ended up, you know, massaging, you know, tens of thousands of people, but I was very fascinated with drawing anatomy in school. Like I draw a rib cage. Mm-hmm. I draw like, you know, people drawing flowers in a vase, and my teacher just walked by and she's like, you do you, you pass, you did a rib cage. So I found it very interesting, of course, because I got to meet these really incredible creatures and make these creatures. So I am very excited to see what that looks like as well. Not that they would look like, you know, what I drew, but they just, you know, they had to have all the functionings, but yet they had to be very distinct and very different and very, interesting. Very
strong, strong looking women.
Very cool. Very cool. Yay. Okay. So you are working and love and have a big heart for philanthropy. And we were talking a little bit about that pre-show. I'm really excited to hear what it is, how that's inspired you. You know, everybody here is on their way to Ireland because they're going to come to the project that we're doing, and we're not doing that for 10 months, but we have, ironically, when I pulled the statistics, which is why I love on this audience so much, but when we pulled on, you know, the stats of, you know, where's the listenership coming in from, Ireland was number two. I'm like, well, there's a shock. There's a shock. Because we're going to be doing our philanthropy project, of course, all through Canada and all through Ireland, but it impacts everybody. And what about you? You've got something stirring?
I don't have my own thing. I'm more okay. Like, I like to dive into other things and see. A lot of mine is, I'm a curious person, so I like to learn. So a lot of mine has been learning, and I've done a few really interesting projects. So in 2010, my husband and I spent, it was 7 weeks in East Africa, and it was sort of a, like, same. I jumped on, I didn't really know what we were doing, but we ended up living in this village and working with a bunch of locals. They taught us how to build mud huts from scratch. We ended up building 21 homes for women with AIDS who were affected by the LRA army in northern Uganda. So that was my first like big jump in, where I was like, oh my gosh, this is so cool. Just to get to learn about a culture in that way, and just to get to live with people. Because a lot of times, you know, it's that tourism one where you go in, you kind of see stuff, but you don't really get immersed in the culture. And like, there was no infrastructure there. There was no big setup. There was nothing fancy. And it was not with a big organization or anything. It was just a bunch of people where we kind of got together, and one person had kind of loosely organized it. And then we just went, and that group of people I'm still amazing friends with. And it was just this weird mesh of people, and it shockingly worked out. And we got to do something really cool and meet this community and meet people and hear their stories. And I think that's what inspired me to do more, was that learning process of learning actually learning about another culture hands-on and getting to bring those stories home, and you know, and just seeing that most people don't want a handout either. Like so many people, right, that third world countries, they just want to get food, and you know, they want to learn, they want just that little leg up to get back to being able to sustain themselves again. And that I think was the biggest lesson I learned, is that nobody wants a handout. Everybody right. just wants to be able to survive though, and to get, you know, these areas that have been so devastated by war and so devastated by some other natural disasters and things, and war on top of that, they just want just to have the baseline leveled up so they can survive again.
Okay. I think, I mean, you know, it's interesting how we all, or when people fall in love with philanthropy, whatever that is, there's really like that essence. I think they say a lot of that about when you give, you get more in return, or, but I would agree with you. I think even when we think in our lives, like, oh man, I just would like even when people say, man, I would just love to win the lottery. It's not that you're actually wanting someone to come up and give you cash. You're wanting relief of something. Like yeah. if you're in that place where you just need this, you just need, like you said, to level up or to baseline or to pay for that, or to, I think that's a lot of what philanthropy, what stems from philanthropy and giving, is just allowing somebody else to take a deep breath or to sit back or to receive, which is, you know, difficult when you're in survival, you know, like it's, I would imagine that they were in a big place of survival. It's that's a very difficult place to be in to begin with.
Yeah. And just getting that little moment where you're not in panic mode so you can reorganize everything. I think that mm-hmm. that trip really inspired me to do a lot more. I mean, it inspired a lot in my life, because at the end of it, we were already over in East Africa. So I was like, I really want to climb Mount Kilimanjaro. Because I'm a mountaineer. I spend a lot of time in the mountains. That is my happy place. Yeah. And on that trip, my husband and I, we ended up getting engaged on the summit of Mount Kilimanjaro. So that name came from, we took the last three letters of the mountain and made that our last name when we got married.
So. Oh, wow.
That trip was pretty impactful for me, for sure.
Yeah. Oh, wow. So this is not your birth last name, and it's not his birth last name.
It's not. No, it's our combination. And we decided when we were getting married that we wanted to create our own, I guess, create our own family, create our own little universe.
Yeah. Well, that's my dear, you are a woman of firsts. I love it. I think you should take that. I'm going to give that to you as a hashtag. That's free. Hashtag woman of firsts. It's all yours. Take it, run with it, make the t-shirt, you know, make the project, make it your second book. Okay. I do. So I can't help it. I'm sorry. Look at, I just love the power of word in print. The power of word in print is incredible. And of course, I'm caught up in this big 262 women power of word in print. So I'm kind of breathing it and living it every day. But look, I want to get back a little bit to your stunt work. And I know we could obviously clearly talk all day, which means that you need to come back, and we're going to do that. But look, you did something that was pretty unusual. I think that you get asked this question a lot, you know, have you met famous people? You're like, of course, have I, you know, what's it been like? Is it strange? But there was something that was really important to you, and I want to make sure we highlight it before we kind of sign off a bit, is you were working while you were pregnant.
Yes, I wasn't, well, I did perform some stunts when I didn't know I was pregnant, but then I was just coordinating. So I wasn't doing dangerous risky things with a human growing inside me.
Yeah.
I was conscious of that. But yeah, I was stunt coordinating with my first. I was coordinating till I was about 7.5 months pregnant, which is, I think looking around the world, I do believe it was a first. I don't want to claim that it was, but it definitely doesn't happen very often, because there's not that many female stunt coordinators. There is a lot more in the last 5 years, which is amazing. I love that our numbers are growing, but it's still not a huge field full of women. And then to tap on actually having a baby while you're doing that job, I don't think it's not a thing.
Right.
And even pregnancy as a stunt woman and like having children, it still is a bit of a stigma. It's still a thing where people try to hide it, you know, hide their pregnancies for as long as possible, and then sort of just go into hiding and then have the baby and come back and be like, okay, I'm good to go. I can do stunts again. And just sort of, it's a really weird thing, because I think there's this sort of thought that people don't want to put mothers in at risk. But, you know, when we're saying yes to the job, we still want to do it. We still want to do our job. We still want to perform. Again, I've been lucky that I work with my husband. So since having children, I have done some really great stunts. Like this year, I got to do the last sort of stunt that I'd never done before. I got to flip a car 2 months postpartum, which I would probably nobody really does either.
Right.
For me, I really wanted to do that stunt. I've crashed cars, I've crashed motorcycles, but I'd never actually flipped one before. So I really wanted to do that stunt. So even, I guess that's my other proof, is that just because I have children and I'm a mother doesn't mean I can't do my job. So for me, it's a standing point of like, look, I don't want to say I can do it all, but I can balance it. I can do both. I can still have my career and have my family. And obviously my family is the most important thing right now, so I'm focusing more on them, but I still can have those moments where my career is still progressing. Yeah. And I realized, especially when I was pregnant with my first son, that I was in a really critical position. I was visible, I'm visible on social media, and being a coordinator, I could walk to work proudly pregnant. So I took that on as my own personal little mission of, I'm going to try to change and make this normal. So I posted on social media often, you know, this is what a stunt coordinator can look like. And I even got, you know, I got producers and people on board with me and writers from the shows I was working on. And they were all on board with like, yeah, this is what our stunt coordinator is. And it was a small little patch, but I think it hopefully started a little bit of a ripple effect that hopefully will keep growing into some bigger waves over the next decade or so and make it more normal.
Well, it does start there, right? And it sounds so cliche and it sounds so Hallmark and it sounds like I'm going to walk into the store and buy a Carlton card that says, you know, it only takes one, because we've heard it so many times, right? But it does. Like, it does.
You sort of throw the first pebble, right?
And not only that, but I think what we don't talk about, because it's like, oh, takes one. The fear, the unknown, this could go in an opposite direction, because we've seen that happen too. We've seen people stand up, we've seen people stand up, and we, even if we've watched it on TV, like we've seen people, no longer on the planet that stood up for something that was really important to them. And so it trickles down in our subconscious when we make a bold move, and it may not be a bold move for someone to say, oh yeah, well, okay, that's cool. But it's your internal bold move. It's the dialogue that goes on when you put that post on social media. Like this could end my career. This could help my career. This could piss people off. This could make people happy. This could get me fired. This could get me hired. Like all of that stuff. I went through it in a very different way. I think we all go through it in a different way when we stand up for something, or we make our voices known, or we try to put, like when you say a ripple, sometimes we're trying, you know, we're like, you know, like we're sailing through, like, you know, we're making huge, huge waves. And we know by nature, we might be making someone happy, but we're probably going to piss off something, or we're going to try to break the norm. I think that all goes through in one little millisecond.
It's a little bit scary to throw that. Like, I'm not going to lie. Like, I did have those thoughts where I'm like, yeah, could be detrimental to my career. But the first time a woman messaged me back and was like, oh my God, I'm so stoked that you're posting this. And then, and then slowly more stunt women trickled in, like, and you know, a lot of them didn't want to post publicly, so they would just DM me. But it was that you were so glad that you're doing this, because you know I'm not brave enough to share like that yet, but it's so cool that somebody is.
So yeah,
I was like, okay, whew, it's worth it. And then same when like the production, I happened to do two projects for Netflix back to back, and they got on board, and then right after that they did their, you know, I can't remember what the campaign was called, it was like Strong as a Mother or something, and they did a whole campaign on all the working moms that were working at Netflix. And it was this really cool campaign that they put out. And it was kind of like right after that. And I was like, okay. They're listening. People are listening. It wasn't detrimental. It started, you know, and those projects were already in works, but it was part of this wave that was starting. So I was like, okay, it wasn't a bad thing. It wasn't a bad thing.
No, it's monumental. It was like when I had my healing studio. So we're talking again, 29 years ago, and we did massage and reflexology, which was still considered woo-woo back then. And we did, you know, lymphatic drainage, and we did that, but we also did chakra balancing and energy work. And there was intuitives on staff, and there was readings, and there was all this stuff. And we literally were so scared. We created two brochures because we didn't want people to not come. Woo-woo wasn't accepted. Like, take it 29 years ago, before Starbucks, people, woo-woo wasn't accepted, you know, before cell phones, you know, woo-woo wasn't accepted. And so we went through that same thing, but you know what? It reminds me of when I finally, so one of my bucket lists, I'm going to ask you what's on one of your bucket lists, but, and then we're going to wrap up, because we could literally talk forever. But the, when I met Gloria Steinem for the first time, which was just a lifelong dream for me, that was a bucket list. And, you know, had a chance for her to sign the book, and we had this conversation, honestly, in Bellingham, in this small little place before COVID hit. It was pretty weird. I was like, there's only like a couple hundred people here. Like, this is kind of weird, because she's pretty big. And the only thing I could think of to say to her, because I only had a very short moment, I was just like, thank you. Like that, I can't think of anything else. Just thank you. And so when those women were DMing you, and like, it was just like, thank you. Like, thanks for taking it on the shoulder, man. Like, thanks for taking it on the chin.
Cause it makes it worth it. Cause you're like, you don't know. And it's just that little bit of validation from someone being like, you hit home for me. I'm like, okay, one person.
Yeah.
Okay, it was worth it.
Yeah, awesome. Okay, so we're going to wrap up. I have a special question for you, but before we do, you know, all of this aside, I always think it's important, like, and I think it just gives such insight, and when you put it out there, it manifests. So outside of the book and outside of the script and outside of all of that, what's a bucket list thing for you? What's something that's on your bucket list that, you know, it doesn't have to be big, it doesn't have to be small, just bucket list. What do you want to check off?
Mine's gonna be very random, because I've been lucky that I just did my biggest bucket list. Well, not biggest, but it was the last thing on my bucket list career wise that I really wanted to do stunt wise this year.
Oh, this doesn't have to be career. This can be anything.
So I do have a random list of things.
Yeah, what's your random?
I almost did it 10 years ago, and then I just didn't drive off the road and go do it, take an hour break. It's really dumb. I've wanted to skinny dip in Crater Lake since I was like 17.
All right. I haven't done it
yet. So someday I will do a road trip and I will drive down to Crater Lake. I don't know why Crater Lake, but it was stuck in my head. And that would be my random.
Random. I love random.
There's my very random bucket list item that I have not done.
All right. This is why, because it's super cool. Okay. Look, tell people where they can follow you. Tell people again the book, and tell people how they can follow you personally. And then I have one final really good question for you.
All right.
All right.
Best to follow me on Instagram at Maya R O Stunts. It's spelled with a J, M A J A A R O Stunts. My graphic novel is Amazon with an E, graphic novel. And you can also look me up on Facebook, Maya R O. Those are probably the best places to follow me.
All right. And you guys, you know, it's in the show notes. So, you know, if you're driving, just look at the show notes later. We thank you so much. What an amazing conversation that we had today. Before you go, my dear, and you know, for you, this is like, of course. So before you pack your suitcase and you go to that desert island, just you and you, you got room for one album in your suitcase. What album could you imagine not listening to for the rest of your days?
Oh,
and it's not, and it can't be a playlist. It's got to be, you know, good old vinyl. We're talking vinyl.
It would probably either be Abbey Road or by the Beatles, or Appetite for Destruction by Guns N' Roses.
Pick one. One. You've only got room.
Guns N' Roses.
All right, Guns N' Roses it is. I was just listening to Axl Rose the other day. I'm like, look at you go. Sweet child. I mean, that man can move. I'm like, okay. He's like an animated lizard. Okay.
I used Paradise City for my first fashion show, Runway.
Oh, yeah? Oh, that's awesome. Okay, look. Thank you so much for being here. You guys, do I need to tell you that we are doing this most incredible? I want to talk about the book. There's lots of things that are going on, you guys, right now. You know that we've got the planner, the entrepreneur, creative, hey, I'm so busy, I need reverse engineering structuring planner to help you get through this whole next year. And so if you want it, we've got it. So you know how to reach out. There is a huge, the largest authorship and speakership happening for International Women's Day. That's going from 2023 of March all the way to Mother's Day of 2024. If you speak and you want to be on stage and you got something to say, you know, contact me. If you'd like to be featured as one of the 262 women in the 262 Mission Accepted, basically rock the world. I'll just say rock the world book. That's not the title, but you know what I mean. If you want to be in there, I want you to be in there. So look, super hard to get a hold of me. It's deb@debdrummond.com. I'm sure you can't remember that. Super easy. Or if you want to be where she is and you want to be sitting and chatting and sitting on the couch having a conversation and sharing your mission with the world, I want to hear from you. So you guys are fantastic. I love you. Adore you. Thank you so much for coming on the show. I look forward to having more conversations with you and having you back and being a part of supporting your book launch. That will be an incredible thing. So thanks, everybody. Be groovy, stay cool, and we will see you soon. Bye for now.